Welcome to the UDIA Queensland's Development DROM podcast, where we speak to members and ask them to share some property industry insights and at the same time get to know our industry colleagues a little better. My guest today is Bruce Harper, Avid Property Group's Executive General Manager. Bruce leads a team that develops, markets and sells a portfolio of land developments and spec housing estates across Queensland, ranging from the 5,000-lot master-planned Harmony community on the Sunshine Coast to integrated housing developments on the Gold Coast. Bruce has a 45-year career in property development, holding senior roles in both the public and private sectors. From his early career as a local government city planner, Bruce took on the role of CEO of the Land Management Corporation, the South Australian State Government's development arm, and in the last 20 years has held chief executive and senior management roles in the private sector. Bruce has a particular focus on large-scale greenfield projects and has been involved in some of Australia's most iconic projects such as Golden Grove, Mawson Lakes, Harmony, and a range of other projects across New South Wales, Queensland, and South Australia. He has been an instigator of the many innovations in urban development, including small lot housing and numerous environmental innovation and urban designs initiatives. Bruce holds planning and company director qualifications and has been a really active member of industry groups, including the UDIA, in addition to serving as a chairman and member of a range of government and other industry advisory boards and committees. For relaxation, Bruce paints mainly portraits and has written a couple of children's books. Bruce has also recently relearned to play the piano after a 50-year break. Thanks so much for joining us on the Development DROM, Bruce. Now, Bruce, you've spent some time as a consultant, as a CEO of the Land Management Corporation in South Australia, and senior roles at a number of private development companies, including, of course, Avid. How important is that diversity of roles across both private and public sectors assisted you throughout your career?
It's been very important. I hope given me an insight in the different ways that people and organisations and management types plan and operate. Bear in mind too that I started my career in local government, so it's given me a bit of an insight into that beast as well.
Yes.
What is important is understanding what an organisation's objectives are. And I think that's been the big learning for me, the objectives of government and how bureaucracies operate, in particular, you know, things like the siloed nature of particularly state government, are as great a mystery to the average private developer as are IRRs and development margins and commercial returns and risks are to the average public servant. So I think to straddle the chasm between those two criteria has been really important in learning my knowledge and probably advancing my career.
Going back to the time that you spent in local and state government, do you think we're any closer to bridging that gap between a level of understanding between industry and government about how the other operates and things that are important to each of those parties?
I'd like to say yes, but I think the answer is probably no. I don't think we really have a lot of insight into how the half lives and works and operates.
Yeah, and that's important to bridge that gap, isn't it? Now, reflecting on your time with Avid up until now, Bruce, what are some of the things that you're most proud of? And yes, I'm going to ask you to name your favourite projects, your favourite children.
Oh, look, if I don't name projects for a start, but I think the acquisition and the merger of Villa World Homes into a business was a highlight of that period. It's never easy to take organisations that have different cultures, different management styles, different systems, and successfully bring those together. And I think that's something that we were able to do, notwithstanding it was a bit of a challenge. I mean, it has allowed Avid to expand its business into integrated housing. It's allowed us to broaden the scope of what we do and the returns to the business. But I think probably, you know, the difficult part of that was that only 4 months after the ink on that deal had been signed, COVID happened.
That's right.
And the extra implications for me personally was that our headquarters are in Sydney, and that meant that with the border closures, no one from our Sydney headquarters was able to travel up into Queensland to help with that merger. So I was asked to spend some time on the Gold Coast, probably for, I think it was for 4 months, but ended up being for 18 months. So
goodness,
to drive
Bruce.
That integration. So that was a bit of a challenge.
How many trips to the beach did you get in that 18 months, Bruce? One?
I did a few, actually. To be honest, it wasn't as bad as it sounded. I was able to have a swim in the morning and coffee before I went to work. So it was pretty good,
notwithstanding. It has to be some perk.
Yeah, that's right. There was some upside there. Look, but also, I mean, clearly one of the key successes in the period at Avid has been the success of our Harmony project and winning the 2023 UDIA, both state, Queensland, and national awards for best master plan community and best project. So that was a great thrill to my team and a great effort for both them and the consultants and contractors that have worked on that site.
Yes, it hasn't been without its challenges, like any development project, Bruce.
No, it hasn't. I guess all projects have challenges, yes. But that particular project has had some real challenges and continues to have challenges, notwithstanding its great social and financial success.
Yeah, absolutely. You talked about the time of the merger and particularly COVID involved in that. Is that been the most challenging thing that you can recall as a development professional that you've had to navigate?
Not really. COVID didn't really slow down the development industry.
No,
if anything,
it
sped it up. And so, as I would say to my staff, you know, you get one or two of these sort of boom periods in your career, and so make the most of it. So it really didn't have a delivery challenge other than the cost implications of prices going up and costs of materials going up and delays and bringing things like stormwater pipes. So there were those sorts of challenges. I think probably the biggest challenge I've had in the last few years was when I first moved to Queensland in 2008 to take up a role as CEO of a company called Petrac, just in time for the global financial crisis. So dealing with the insurmountable headwinds of that thing was meant that I had to downsize and then retrench and eventually all the staff and then myself.
Incredible.
So that was pretty tough.
Bruce, did that time navigating the uncertainty that came with the GFC, did that in any way prepare you for navigating all of the early times with COVID where no one really knew what was going on and each day was a mystery wrapped up in an enigma in terms of how this was going to play out?
I think it did. I've always quite liked change.
Yes.
And I've sort of liked quite adapting to change and dealing with change. So it was difficult. I mean, the GFC was also a very, as much as it sounds awful, it was a good learning experience to
Absolutely.
Me in terms of, I probably learned more in the sort of 6 months of trying to negotiate the success or survival of companies than I probably learned in the 6 years prior to that. So you do have to learn and do things on the fly and on the run, and you have to, you know, you make some mistakes, but you also learn a lot and do some things right.
Yes. How do you get comfortable with change, Bruce? Because it's something that most recoil from. And, you know, and even when we talk to the community about change and growth, it's something that people don't feel comfortable with. Why are you attracted to it?
I quite like not going to work being the same thing the next day. So I've always quite liked the ability to see things differently, to innovate, to see how you can advance projects. If you were doing the same thing over and over again, I'd find that particularly boring.
Yes.
So when change comes, yes, it brings stress. Yes, it brings some challenges. But I'm sure that a lot of my colleagues would agree that that's the fun part of the business.
It is. That's what drives you, isn't it? And does that explain taking back up the piano and learning the piano?
Probably. Probably because it was the first time I've had a bit of time to do that. My mother was a piano teacher, and so I learned to play the piano when I was quite young and probably gave up in my early teens. But it was something I always enjoyed, and it found to my surprise some 50 or so years later that
Incredible.
I could actually still read music a bit.
Incredible. Well, I have an old violin sitting at home, so if you're keen for a new challenge, Bruce, just let me know. I could never play it particularly well, despite my best attempts. But
I'm going to give up on that because both my daughters play the violin, and I did attempt that at times, but highly unsuccessfully.
Too many netball injuries crueled my violin career, I'm sure of it. Now, Bruce, commercial negotiations and then on the other hand, negotiations with government have been a major part of your role for many years. How do you approach these two very different types of negotiations?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think it's important first to understand the different objectives that drive commercial and government negotiations. One's about money, and the other's often about ideology. When you're negotiating with business, whether it's to buy something, to merge something, to acquire something, it's overwhelmingly about the commerce.
Very rational discussion.
It is.
Yes.
It's, you know what you have to achieve to make a project stand up commercially. You can price risk, you can price opportunity. And by the same token, the other person sitting on the other side of the table can do exactly the same. Yeah. So you achieve the outcome. It's dictated by a shared objective to reach a decision that you're both generally commercially happy with.
Yes.
Contrast that with government, which is quite different, where you're often dealing with people I'd say mainly in local government, but also in state government and less so in federal government, that have little understanding about the viability of a project. And that can make for very challenging times and quite some interesting and quite hard negotiations, because you're both looking at different objectives and that makes it hard.
Yeah.
Having said that, I think probably talking about the Land Management Corporation earlier, I think probably the most rewarding negotiations I've had was when I was CEO of the LMC, or Land Management Corporation, when we negotiated joint ventures with Delfin and Lendlease for projects such as Mawson Lakes. And that was pretty good, because the government who I was representing had an objective, both financial and non-financial objectives. It had to make a 50-50 joint venture that made a profit, but also was tasked with achieving some non-financial objectives on sustainability, on new forms of housing, energy management and water management. And so I found those things actually really quite challenging and very rewarding.
Yes. And how do we bridge that gap, Bruce? You talked about, you know, I think that time at LMC too and that particular project would have sharpened everybody's focus around what was really important. How do we do that in an environment where perhaps there's no commercial interest on the government side in a project?
Well, I think we've done it better at the state government level. And I think things like the old ULDA developed those sorts of skills, and the private sector side of the industry applauded that and saw that as a great advantage to have someone in state government that could see commercial outcomes and want to achieve those. How do you do it in local government? It's very, very hard. I don't know the answer to that. If I did, I'd find it, life would have been a lot easier. But I'd say what is important is that I have worked with a number of local governments over my career that have been incredibly supportive, have understood commerce, have understood the need for innovation, and have embraced that.
Yes.
And they've been great projects to work on. And they're often driven by either a mayor or a CEO or the head of planning who shares that passion and wants to be successful in being an innovative local government body.
Yeah.
Where you deal with those people as a developer, life's pretty good.
Yes. And, you know, there's certainly a role too for industry organisations to continue to try to bridge that gap, I'm sure. Now, Bruce, you've seen many challenges over the years and how the industry has faced those. What headwinds do you think that we're facing in the lead up to 2032?
Well, I guess between here and 2032, we're probably going to get one or probably two property cycles.
Yeah, so it's a good point.
Full highs and lows that they entail. I think the most observable problem that we have now is the cost of infrastructure, the rising cost of infrastructure for both projects related to the Olympics and non-Olympic related projects.
Yeah.
And I think the real implications of that's going, well, not going to be, already is the cost of construction for particularly high rise.
Yeah.
And that's going to impact on affordability, on our rental problems that we have, and just finding people to be able to assist that. So that's going to be, I think, our biggest challenge in the short term.
Yes. It's a very strange time, isn't it, where the demand from housing is still very strong in Queensland, but the ability to bring the housing out of the ground, particularly, as you say, in high density residential, is very constrained.
It is constrained. I mean, we have the same constraints, I guess, in land, as has always been a key issue for the land developers to be able to have, you know, access of supply of and planned supply release of land to meet the growing demands. Because, you know, whether we like it or not, the vast majority of people still choose to have their homes in suburban locations and not in inner city locations.
Yes. Yeah.
And I say that as somebody who lives in the inner city.
Exactly, Bruce. You're a walking billboard for high density.
Yeah.
How important to you is culture within a team, and how do you measure how your team is traveling, whether they're up or whether they're down, Bruce?
Well, culture is critical. I think it is quite critical to the organisation. I mean, it's a determinant of success. Obviously, it's led from the top.
Yeah.
And it has to be led from the top. You can create a short-term, I'll probably call it a toxic culture of pushing and shoving to achieve some short-term objectives. But by and large, it's not sustainable in the long term. You don't create good organisations and long-term organisations without having a culture that brings your team and your staff along with you.
Yes.
We do a number of ways in Avid. We measure that. We have an emerging leaders group. We train our staff on developing their leadership skills. For example, we do a lot of informal measures of how things are going.
Yes.
We ask our executive teams to do the same sort of courses as our staff do. So they can see the results of what sort of leaders we are, as well as we can see what sort of personalities and staff we have working for us. So that's important. And I think it's a good way of building culture within an organization.
And Bruce, do you look for some particular signals as to if you're walking around the office and you see somebody responding to a problem in a particular way, do you think, oh, crikey, we've got an issue here, or it's probably time to get back together as a group? Do you have those instincts around how the team is traveling culturally, or is it about metrics?
Well, it's a bit of both, I think it's probably more intuitive than anything. First thing is, it's good that the Avid staff tend to be working in the office, which is great. And it's great for them. And I think most of them recognize that the great benefits of the interactions that they have with each other while they're in the office.
Yeah.
You know, you can soon tell if there are problems.
Yeah.
And some are hard to solve, some are easier to solve. But it really is identifying issues early and trying to change them.
Tackle them.
Yeah.
Thinking of the next generation of our property development professionals, what are the key attributes, not skills, that you think young professionals should prioritize?
I think there's probably four that sort of spring to mind. Confidence.
Yes.
I like people who are confident. They come in and they want to talk and they're confident about what they want to do. That's great, even though they may not have the skills. It's
you
good.
Can get
confidence.
That.
Confidence is good. It goes with some of the others. Enthusiasm and courage. And also the need to be flexible. So I think flexibility. Okay. So confidence, enthusiasm, courage, and flexibility are sort of my four criteria I sort of look at as outside of the sort of skill set.
And the flexibility piece, Bruce, is that reflecting the nature of the industry to a certain extent too?
It does, because we say we're a large industry, but there's a variety of things that people can do and within that industry. And if you're working in, say, land development and building as we are, it's good that staff can move across into various things. I mean, we've all been given opportunities to advance our careers and probably things that we thought we were good at or we would stay at doing earlier in our career. You know, someone's pushed us into doing something else and we've had to be flexible to do that. And our careers have ended up somewhat on different paths than we ever envisaged.
Yes. Well, I still think that I'm excellent with Excel spreadsheets, Bruce. So I'm trying to keep my hand in. Yeah. The finance team loves it. Thinking about 2024, what's your focus? Personal, professional, apart from the piano and maybe the violin? What's ahead, Bruce?
Oh, look, I'm getting to the sort of, I wouldn't say the end part of my career, but sort of the twilight part of my career. So look, I'm enjoying what I'm doing. I've been in a position where I've been able to hand over and groom a successor in my role, and he's taken on that role now, which has freed me up for the first time in many, many years to not have any direct staff reports, but be able to work on strategic issues, new projects for the business, reviewing, you know, how a business works and how it can be improved.
Yep.
So that's my new challenge is looking at more strategic things and how Avid can be even a better and stronger business than it currently is.
Fantastic. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat to us, Bruce. And thank you also for always being there at the end of the phone, certainly when UDIA calls. We always appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and pick your brains, Bruce. It's wonderful.
Thanks for that.
Thanks, Bruce. Thank you for listening to the UDIA Queensland's Development Drum podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us. Remember to rate and review this show on your favourite podcast app. While you're there, please make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss an episode.